Welcome, everybody, to The Night's Cast, the official podcast of WatchersOnTheWall.com, a Game of Thrones community for breaking news, casting, and commentary. And we all knew this day was coming, but we were recording this one week to the day after the final episode of season one of House of the Dragon. So we all knew we would be having hot D list Sundays eventually, but still just kind of womp to think about it. No House of the Dragon tonight, and potentially not for the next 2 years, but it's okay. We have each other. We will get through this. I'm Samantha, a contributing writer for Watchers on the Wall. You can follow me on Twitter if you like, at the Santa Snark. And I'm joined today by Petra. Hi, Petra.
Hi, Sam. My name is Petra Halber. I am also a contributor, and you can follow me on Twitter at PL Halber.
And we're also joined by Vanessa. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, everyone. I am Vanessa Kennedy. I'm also a contributor at Watchers on the Wall, and you can follow me on Twitter at VK Cole Artist.
And of course, you can find Watchers on the Wall and the Night's Cast on all the socials, which I will rattle off at the end of the episode. So we're going to get right into it. Typically, if you have listened to our episodes before, you know that occasionally we might cover interesting news tidbits related to the show. Right now, it's mostly, you know, recaps of interviews and stuff after the show has ended, potential, you know, speculation stuff going on about season two. But we are excited to talk about the finale. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to jump right in. Obviously, of course, this is not a spoiler-free discussion of the show. We can try and abstain from spoilers from Fire and Blood, but if we're going to be speculating on things going forward, there may be a couple of spoilers in there if you haven't read that. So just wanted to put that caveat in place. So let's talk about the finale. Everybody, Sam, what did we think? Vanessa, start with you. Just overall impression of how they wrapped up the season.
I really liked the episode. Wasn't my favorite. I don't even know if I have a favorite this season. Probably either it might be Driftmark or Lord of the Tides. Those are really close for me. But this was really good. I did enjoy it better than episode 9. I know that they consider them to be kind of sister episodes, kind of like a split finale. You want to think of it that way. But I mean, obviously I'm Team Black, so of course I'm going to like it better. But it was also just, it was just so like heart-wrenching and sad, but I thought it was a really good wrap up to the season as a whole.
Petra, what did you think? Overall impressions?
I liked it too. I thought the way that they finished things with the death at Storm's End and ended on that close up of Rhaenyra was a great way of sending us into season two with momentum. I probably at this point would actually say my favorite episode of the season was episode 9. And I'm not just saying that to be contrarian, Vanessa. It worked for me. It sort of tied up loose threads, and I felt everyone's actions felt authentic to the characters as they had as they had been established. Any other thoughts? No, not really. I mean, we'll get into greater detail as we go.
Yeah, I agree with both that it was an amazing episode. It really was a good way to wrap up the first season. Also not my favorite. I think that, you know, it did have a lot of strength to it. I would have to say that probably Lord of the Tides is probably my favorite. If for no other reason than Paddy Considine's performance in that episode. But I thought it was great. I thought it felt very strong. It felt like a very strong episode. No pun intended, I'm not talking. I saw Petra's face and I was like, oh, no pun intended. It felt like a very strong way to wrap up the season because yes, Petra, like you said, it did wrap things up kind of neatly. It ended on a cliffhanger that's not necessarily really difficult to figure out. We all know what's coming, but in maybe not a cliffhanger, it ended with a great moment of suspense and anticipation. And that, you know, was that masterful final shot of Rhaenyra learning about Luke's death. She has her back. I don't know why, but I've been thinking about that scene so much. And I think it's just if you'll permit me to just kind of ramble for a second, you know, when earlier in the episode, Rhaenyra has a stillborn baby, we see her grieving, we see her face, we see, you know, she wraps the body for burial and stuff afterwards. But when she learns about Luke's death, the fact that they chose to A, have like no dialogue, like no audio really, except for the score, you know, we only see her back and she just kind of, you know, she has like that little like stumble. She kind of like heaves her shoulders like she's sobbing and then, you know, she turns around. But the fact that her back was facing the camera while she was grieving, I don't know. There's just something about it that hits you so much harder. You know, when she was grieving for the baby, she was grieving for what might have been. But she was, this was a case of her grieving for her teenage son who's already, you know, she's had a lifetime with him. And now she's mourning that. And it's just like a grief that is so profound that it's like, nobody except a mother who's lost a child like of that age would understand it. Like we're not invited into that grief because it's so for Rhaenyra. And it's so instrumental, obviously, in what happens next, because then to Rhaenyra, that's like, that's it. No more fucking around. This means war. And then when Emma D'Arcy turned around, their face, her the expression on Rhaenyra's face is just mwah, chef's kiss. It was one of my favorite things about this entire episode. Sorry, I feel like I rambled.
The greens fucked around and now they're gonna find out for sure.
exactly. That's yeah. So also before we get started in a deeper discussion, I found out, like probably a lot of people, or maybe not, maybe I'm the only one, I had been pronouncing both Celtigar and Cregan Stark incorrectly. I still think it's Cregan. That's how I read it, but as I said to Lewis on Twitter, it might just be my crappy American accent.
The phonetics in George R. R. Martin's world is ridiculous. Like no vowel has consistent pronunciation, even within the same house, within the same like dialect. It's all up for grabs.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was funny. As soon as she said Celtigar, I was like, no, Celtigar, right?
And yet it's like, Luceris. C plus E is with Luceris, but it's Celtic. Come on, guys.
I always said Celtigar because the Celts, like in our
world. And that makes sense. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I always said it that way.
Then we
have the Boston Celtics, which makes no sense.
I know.
English is messed up.
I all the respect and love in the world for Emma D'Arcy, but I will be continuing to pronounce it Cregan Stark, not Cregan. Anyway, we're not going to go through scene by scene of the episode. You know, again, I thought we could just talk about maybe some of our favorite points of discussion about it. I wanted to start with the miscarriage scene, which, good Lord, yet another really difficult birth scene to watch. And not just for people who have given birth or been pregnant or lost a child or whatever, but I mean, even anybody who knows someone, you know, that's happened to their partner or something. It's just, it was really, really hard to watch. But I wanted to know, your guys' thoughts on this. She kept screaming, or she screamed it a couple of times, Rhaenyra screamed, get out, which I think is from Fire and Blood. But I was just wondering, you know, I feel like, why was she saying that? Why was she saying get out? Because she really wanted this baby, obviously. Did she have a feeling that the baby was already lost? Was she just scared of what was going to happen after happening, what happened to Emma and even Lena? I
think my opinion was that it was a more difficult birth for her. And also because it was early, I think she was operating under the assumption that the baby wasn't going to survive anyway. So there was no really hope for that. And it was just like, let's get this over with. This is like awful to have to go through knowing what the outcome's going to be. So that was my take on it.
Yeah.
I listened to the official Game of Thrones podcast with Jason Concepcion is one of the hosts. I forget who the other host is. But for episode 10, they interviewed Ryan Condal. And he was talking about that scene. And he said that Rhaenyra was feeling at odds with her feminine body in that moment, because it was the labor pains that were keeping her from being at the war council where her husband was taking charge and making decisions against her wishes. And so I hadn't considered that while I was watching the scene. I just assumed it was pain and the knowledge that the baby wasn't going to make it. But I think that also informs, that perspective also informs the line "get out," because she knows it's over. And the only thing that's standing between her and being able to take up responsibility again is this damn stillborn. And so, yeah, it's a harsh thing to say, but I bought it, you know, I get it.
Yeah, I could definitely see the reasoning behind that. You know, if you've been pregnant, you know what it feels like for the most part, and you know what's normal and you know what's not. And I think that she maybe knew from the moment she started having those pains that she suspected, you know? So, but yeah, that's really the whole thing about her also wanting to being at odds with herself, because she also wanted to be, you know, with the war council, and that being the thing kind of standing in the way of that. That's fascinating. I never thought about it that way, but,
sometimes those supplementary interviews actually help, like inside the episode interviews just confuse me. But every once in a while, I'll get a little tidbit and I'll go, oh, wow. Yeah, that puts things into a really interesting light. Thank you.
Yeah. This show was, I mean, I'm not going to say the show was tough on women, because we've seen that and it's in Game of Thrones, but it was very raw when it came to talking about, I mean, literally pregnancy and childbirth and everything, but it's a theme, I think, that, you know, was throughout the series, and for them to have the miscarriage happen in the finale was kind of like, you know, an exclamation point to that. But Vanessa, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Game of Thrones was tough on women in a more exploitative way, whereas this is very different. It is much more real, and that's why it hits hard, because so many of us have gone through these kind of experiences.
Yeah. And it makes it feel, it's like you said, you know, Game of Thrones, we definitely saw that kind of exploitative aspect of it. And here it makes you, it just, because that's something that informs our character, like that's something that influences them, you know, going forward, every aspect of it. You know, Emma dying influenced Rhaenyra, you know, possibly being afraid of having children and her kind of struggling with that. And then we had Lena's death. We had, you know, of course, Emma's very, very brutal death. But all of this, I mean, they don't happen just to happen. They happen because they like drive the characters forward and drive plots forward. And that's, I think, why it was successful, I think. Do y'all have an opinion on that?
I agree. I just wanted to say one more quick thing about this scene in particular, is that I feel like, as far as informing her character, I feel like it shows incredible strength from Rhaenyra, like having to go through that, knowing what the outcome is going to be. And like doing it by herself, like not taking any help from anyone. I can't imagine like standing up, pulling this child out of me, and then being the one to, you know, prepare the body and wrap it up. And then, you know, she does the funeral, and then we see her like hop on a dragon like shortly after going through all of this. Like, I consider myself strong in some respects, but I'm nowhere near that level.
No, me neither. So, okay, let's touch on the choking scene, because it generated a lot of controversy, I think. And, you know, this is when Rhaenyra's already lost the baby, but she's kind of confronted Daemon about trying to take things over. And he says something nasty to her, and she says, okay, clear the room. And then it's just two of them talking from the fireplace, and Daemon gets upset and grabs her by the throat. You know, and I did see, like, I was kind of surprised that people were surprised, A, that Daemon would do something like that, because we literally have seen him, we saw him murder his first wife, or at least it was heavily implied with the rock and all.
I'm okay that we didn't have to watch it.
Well, yes, no.
Like if Eli Roth had directed that episode, that scene would have gone on for two more minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, we already saw Joffrey's face bashed in. I didn't need to see that again.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was bad enough.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, I was surprised that I was seeing, you know, people all of a sudden were like, oh, I'm not a Daemon fan anymore. And I'm like, were y'all paying attention?
Like, are you a fan because you think he's a good guy? Because I have something to tell you, if so.
Yeah, I have a book for you to read called Fire and Blood. So that was one part of it. But the other thing that I was kind of surprised about were, like, I was not at all shocked to figure out, because one of the things that happens in that scene too is Rhaenyra says something about the Song of Ice and Fire, and Daemon's like, huh? And she's like, oh my God, Viserys never told you about the prophecy. And I was not surprised that Viserys had not told Daemon that. Like, I mean, I know that Daemon was technically there for a while, but I always felt that it was, Viserys was kind of hoping that that would only be temporary, you know, like he was either waiting on the holding out hope for the birth of a son, or he didn't really want to share it with him because he may not have thought Daemon was entirely like worthy of it.
Mm. I Daemon really doesn't surprised. Seem like he cares about that kind of stuff, you know? It's like,
yeah,
he thinks it's all bullshit.
Well, he says to Rhaenyra, he's like, dreams didn't make us kings, dragons did.
Right.
Which, fair point, the dragons had something to do with it, but yeah, I know.
Petra, of course, they wouldn't have been kings if it wasn't for a dream that got them to Westeros in the first place. So
yeah,
that's kind of not exactly true.
Yeah. Petra, what do you think about what were your thoughts on that scene and Daemon not being told the prophecy?
So it had been spoiled for me ahead of time. I didn't watch the leaked episode, but I did allow myself to watch, read some of the tweets just cause. I feel less worried about spoilers. Well, with Game of Thrones, I was very diligent in not getting spoiled. But with House of the Dragon, because I fundamentally know what happens, it doesn't bother me as much. Anyways, so I knew that he choked her. So I kind of already had time to process that. And I think I also knew that it was about the prophecy. And so when you have, like, you know, is it 2 days or so to like gestate information, you're not going to be surprised by it, even if it doesn't go exactly as you'd imagined. I think it's perfectly in character for him. And I like that the show isn't feeding that myth that violent people are only going to be violent to people who deserve it, or to certain people. And if Rhaenyra loves him enough, she'll bring out his best side. Not that she never ever said anything along the lines of, I can fix him, but the optics of him murdering his first wife to marry his third wife, you get my point, could, and I guess did, bring some fans to think that, ah, but she is his true love, and therefore all that bad stuff won't happen to her. Thank you, House of the Dragon, for not taking us down that road. The prophecy continues to be a very, like, meh part of the show for me. It just, every time they bring it up, it irritates me. If I was Viserys, I would have kept it from Daemon as well. But it also makes sense that Daemon's getting angry at Rhaenyra for exhibiting his brother's weakness. So from a character standpoint, I think that scene made perfect sense. Yeah, Daemon is being Daemon, and prophecy continues to bore me.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. And I just wanted to say, didn't George R. R. Martin say that Daemon was equal parts light and darkness? I think he gave a quote, something like that. So, I mean, it boggles my mind that there are people out there like, I can't believe he would do that. Okay. Okay, guys. The way I watched it, and I was also spoiled, Petra, I did see some tweets about it, and I wasn't sure how to feel about it. But seeing it in context, I mean, you've got this man who, you know, he's a rogue. I mean, that's his nickname. He can definitely do violent things, even to people he loves. And I don't think that it means he doesn't love Rhaenyra. I took it as he's just gone through this tragedy of losing a child. And he's not somebody who's going to outwardly show his emotions. I mean, and he probably was worried about losing Rhaenyra. I mean, he just went through that with Lena, not just, but, you know, he'd already had like a tragic circumstance where he lost a wife in the process of childbirth, and like processing all of that, processing the loss of his brother, processing the fact that the Greens took over and usurped the throne. It's a lot to deal with for like anyone. And so I feel like it just, given all of that, and then finding out that your brother, who you love more than anything, didn't trust you with this important piece of information, whether or not you really cared about it or believed it, like to be left out of that had to be kind of just the final straw for him. And so yeah. I was not surprised that he lashed out, and it sucks, but like sometimes horrible things can drive a couple farther apart. Even though you would hope it could drive you closer together, but it doesn't work that way a lot of times. You know, I've had friends that have gone through loss of children and ended up getting divorced because they just couldn't take it. So I was not surprised at all. I think it made perfect sense. It doesn't really change my opinion of his character, because I wasn't rooting for him because I thought he was some kind of hero. I think he's just incredibly interesting and nuanced and chaotic, but you do get those glimpses of a good guy down deep somewhere, at least in some situations. So I think it worked really well with the scene, and I mean, we might as well get used to it because we're going to see much more violence from him going forward, as if we hadn't already seen enough. So to anyone that was troubled by it, I would just say you probably need to go back and read Fire and Blood again if you really want to understand where his character's going.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It was very in line with his character, you know, and again, just because, you know, Petra, like you said, you know, violent people hurt everybody, not just, you know, and it is foolish to think that they're not going to hurt certain people just because they love them, you know, and it, him also realizing that this was like yet another thing that Viserys kept him outside of, like Viserys always wanted to keep him, you know, out of King's Landing, like, oh, go manage the City Watch, go marry somebody in the Vale, like, you know, it definitely, of course, this isn't to excuse it, but, you know, more to kind of peel back the layers on it, and the fact that Daemon, and he's just always responded like that. He's just always been, you know, his first instinct is to try and hurt someone or something. Unfortunately, that was his wife in this case. But yeah, I mean, it definitely, in the setting of the scene, in the context of the scene, not out of character at all for Daemon, obviously. So I wanted to know what y'all's opinions were on that, because I saw a lot of takes that people were surprised that Daemon would do that. So, since we mentioned the prophecy a couple times, let's touch on that just for a little bit. We can maybe talk about it more in our episode on the season wrap up, but I agree with you, Petra, that it's boring in a sense. It doesn't bore me. It's just kind of like, it sticks out a little bit. It's like a nail that like you snag something on every time you walk past it, you know, like
I'd say that's a fair visualization.
It just, I know why it's there, and I know that it's not technically, you know, it's still technically part of the lore, but it does feel a little like it's being shoehorned in there every time it comes up, no matter how subtly they try and do it or how well they try to do it. It does kind of, like I said, it just, I don't know. I'm not going to say it's not working for me, but I don't like that I think about it every time. Does that make sense?
I think for me, the fact that before House of the Dragon came out, we had accounts of the Targaryen Civil War that did not, you know, want for a prophecy. There were motivations that got these people to fight each other prophecy free, and it worked just fine. And so when you introduce this, oh, well, I have to worry about the prophecy. Do you, like, what? I'm trying to think of a good story that involves prophecy, but I guess, okay, so you could say like Rhaegar's understanding of the foretold prince who was promised. Like, okay, that explains why else does he do all of these rash things that destabilize the realm? Well, it was because the prophecy was so important to him that it was worth the risk. Like, oh, okay, sure. But this, the prophecy doesn't add urgency, because I feel like people being viciously selfish and power hungry and sexist already gives the plot plenty of momentum.
Right. Like,
go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I guess my two takes on why they included this is, one, to tie it into Game of Thrones a little bit, to give you kind of that reference point that, hey, this is something that's similar between these two series. And then two, I want to say that maybe they were trying to give the Blacks a little bit of a greater purpose for what they're doing. I mean, not to make them heroes, but to make it more understandable or palatable. I mean, when you read Fire and Blood, it's a tough read, because although you can kind of pick a side, they're both pretty awful. And it makes it hard to get, for me, it made it really hard to get emotionally invested in the story. Whereas, and I'm not saying the prophecy has made me get invested, it's more the acting and the way that they've like brought these characters to life has made me more emotionally invested in this. Sorry, I cannot talk about that. But I think maybe having that gives you a little bit more reason to like Team Black. I don't know. I get confused, because I feel like there are times where they're trying to make us want to choose that side over the Greens, but then, you know, they go and humanize the Greens as well. So it's hard to say, but those were my just two takes on why they might have included it.
But also what really gets me is Aegon is also Viserys's blood, so he's also a Targaryen. So if the issue is that Rhaenyra has to be the one because she is the Targaryen, the war is between Targaryens. Someone is going to be a Targaryen on the throne regardless. The incentive of it must be me. No, it doesn't. As if we're going to go obsessed with like pure bloodlines, which is just something I just love it every time characters talk about it. You're kind of in the clear, even if Aegon doesn't know about the prophecy and that's an issue. You could tell him about it. Like, yeah, that is not a reason to root for Rhaenyra.
Go ahead, Sam. Sorry.
Well, I'm trying to remember, you know, like when Viserys and I don't remember what episode it was in the first half of the season, but when he tells Rhaenyra they're standing in front of Valyrian's skull and they're having the discussion about it. I think Petra, I didn't get the impression that he was entrusting her with this just because she's Targaryen blood, but because he's naming her his heir. And he chose her as his heir because he says something like, you know, your mother always knew what you were, or something like that, or how special you were, or something like that. And I never really saw it until basically he didn't realize that Rhaenyra would be a good person to lead until they had that conversation. He made that decision and da da da. So I think it's not only a question of, okay, this is my heir, but like this person, I'm choosing her as my heir because she's worthy of it, and because she's worthy of carrying the secret of this prophecy that's only known, you know, passed down from king to king, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to kind of say something similar. And then the other thing I was thinking is that through her mother, who was also part Targaryen and also Valyrian, so, you know, also Valyrian blood, she's more Valyrian than Aegon would be. And I agree with your point, Sam. Like, even before Aegon grew up, I mean, now that he's grown up, we definitely see that she's a much more worthy heir than Aegon would be. So trying to like entrust him with this prophecy and think that he's actually going to be able to fulfill it is just laughable.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why, like I said, I can't really decide if I love it or hate it. But I think maybe I'm just going to remain neutral on it, the idea of the prophecy in general, because I can see how it's, if not integral, like it's not a tent pole of, it doesn't have to be a tentpole of the story, because Petra, like you said, there was plenty that was going on between the Greens and the Blacks leading up to war. We didn't need to figure this prophecy thing into it. But I feel like if you squint at it in the right light, it can work. And it also, like, you know, was said, it ties into Game of Thrones itself, you know, that series and those storylines. And I guess, you know, if it's something else that I really liked about the show is that you really do get a sense of time and how many years exactly it's been that A, the Targaryens were in power, and B, that thinking retroactively back to Game of Thrones, this is like a lost, ancient, powerful house that doesn't exist anymore. And they had this, you know, magical prophecy or whatever that they held in high esteem for a really, really long time, even if it was lost for a while. You know, it just, it adds another layer to, I think, the mythology, or at least the perceived mythology of the Targaryens, because they aren't like other people in Westeros.
One last thing I just want to say, I think it would probably work better for me if it had actually been more important in Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It had been an actual Targaryen that, I mean, I know them coming together and having their like joined armies or whatever in the Dragons, blah, 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 whatever. But it ultimately didn't seem to matter all that much. And that's what's so frustrating about the whole thing.
It blows my mind that they decided to remind us explicitly of, I'll say, an incredibly contentious plot point. Like, of all the different things they could have evoked from Game of Thrones, they picked the Arya twist that was not widely acclaimed.
Yeah.
That absolutely just shocks me every single time they bring up this damn prophecy.
Yeah, it has definitely been a point of controversy.
And the fact that D&D just chose that just for fun, for shits and giggles. Like, they didn't, they were not told that by George. They hadn't said that. Like, they just thought it would be cool to have Arya do it. Like, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Rant over.
No, that's fine. And, you know, we were going to talk about this in our season review anyway. So, but speaking of things that are, you know, definitely different from the source material, let's talk about the Aemond Luke.
Can we call it a fight?
Yes.
It wasn't a fight.
It was, I'm thinking of a term.
Chowdown?
No, it's like a term from the Air Force, a dog fight. You know, like when two planes used to fight each other in the air, like whatever.
I just learned something.
I don't know. Not much of a dog fight, I guess, considering that, you know, Vhagar is like a Doberman and RX is like a...
Oh, could we call it a drag race, where drag is short for dragon?
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Okay. Yeah. So another thing that is causing a little bit of discussion amongst people is in Fire and Blood, it is definitely more, I don't know if it's spelled out, but it's more heavily implied that Aemond absolutely has every intention of killing Luke when he chases him off on Vhagar after Storm's End. But in the show, you hear both riders saying to their dragons, no, 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 serve me, which I guess is like the phrase in High Valyrian to make them do what you want. So in other words, they're trying to say that Aemond didn't really mean to actually start this coming civil war by killing Luke, that it was more of an accident.
One thing I just want to say real quick about this, like, people, like, oh, that's not how it happened in the book. Was anyone up in the air with them? I'm sorry. Like, okay, yeah. If you hear what they say to each other before they take off on the dragons, it does seem like Aemon would be fine with killing him. Like, I mean, so I can see them saying, oh, yes, he absolutely meant to do that, but nobody was in the air with them. Like, no one saw firsthand. So who's to say it wasn't an accident? I mean, it drives me nuts when people say, well, in the book, it's a fake historical accounting from three separate sources that you don't know if any one of them is correct, or if it's like a mixture of the three, or maybe they all three got it wrong at some points. Like, oh, it's frustrating. Sorry.
No, I agree. I'm a little bit frustrated with it because I don't, it's, to me, it's a plot change or shift that works. Like, you know, people say, oh, well, he wouldn't have chased him on Dragonback if he, you know, didn't want to kill him. And I'm like, really? Like, Aemond is an asshole and he's a diva, and he definitely hates Luke with a passion. I think he tries to disguise it as like just part of his regular veneer of cool contempt for everybody, but like he hates Luke for what happened. And like, I think he was,
and he's a bully who was bullied. So he's doing now what was done to him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And he's like, maybe, you know, he was feeling a little cockier, like a little emboldened, because it seems like the Baratheons are certainly, you know, ready to throw in the greens. And, you know, maybe he just wanted to like put an exclamation point on that, on like garnering the Baratheon support by like having a little not so harmless fun with Luke. I don't know. Maybe I'm perceiving this the wrong way, but I just don't, I think it works. I think the actors sold it really well too, with being up there and both of them are saying, no. I think that Ewan Mitchell, Eamon, it just, his facial expression afterwards was the perfect expression of holy fuck, I messed up bad. I don't know. I think it works. I think it's perfectly in line with Eamon's character. Vanessa, like you said, it's also Luke's not the way it happened in the book. We don't know. We don't know for sure. I think it worked. I don't have any issues with it.
When I first heard, again, I that was the main thing I learned from the leaks. And which was why I kept looking for more information, because I thought, oh, if this is poorly done, I want to know ahead of time so I'm not disappointed. Because I was a little worried when I first found out that it was going to be a mistake, because I don't usually like it when adaptations exempt characters of responsibility for their bad decision making. I often find it lazy. And so I was imagining how they could possibly wash Amon's hands of this. And the way that they wound up doing it, where he is responsible for escalating the situation. So it's not like he's purely innocent. It's just that he wasn't prepared to become a kinslayer. That worked well. And it leaves room open for him to have some degree of humanity next season. Because otherwise, I mean, in Fire and Blood and in the Histories and Lore featurette, he's just a two-dimensional monster. There's really nothing there to mine. But the fact that they changed it kind of leaves the door open for, okay, yeah, he's an idiot and he made mistakes and how does he deal with it? And we'll find out. But he is a human with a heart that is in conflict with itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that I see him being necessarily, well, yes, it does humanize him. Will that carry forward? I don't really know. I kind of feel like he's the type of person that would be like, okay, well, this happened, I'm just going to own it now.
And oh, I think that is sure. What he's going to do.
We're definitely going to see that outwardly. Will we see like internal conflict in him, like struggling to deal with it? Maybe, probably. It's going to be interesting to see how they incorporate this into next season. Definitely.
Yeah. I'm assuming he's going to go hard into denial. Like he's going to dig his heels in and say, yeah, this cannot have been a mistake.
Yeah.
So it's not that I think we're going to get a scene of him like crying in his bed or something over it, but just the fact that, okay, there was a, he didn't just set out to kinslay and then he starts a war and he still doesn't give a damn. He overreached his grasp. Mm-hmm. He felt horrified by it. He probably smirks and pretends he, like that, that's an interesting thing for a character to do aside from mm-hmm. just, I'm going to kill you, Luke. Oh, guess what? I killed you.
Yeah.
There's nothing there.
Yeah. And like I said, that's why one of the other reasons why I think that it works and I like it. It adds a little bit more complexity to the whole thing, certainly to Eamon. And I think that mostly what makes it work is the fact that you have both dragon riders who, and especially Eamon, who now has been dragon riding for a decade, commanding the world's largest dragon certainly takes skill. And he can't even get Vhagar to do what he wants. I saw a lot of tweets where it ties into, you know, Danny saying in Game of Thrones, a dragon is not a slave. And this is actually, I mean, this is a great tie into that and a great reminder of the fact that like, you you could have the best relationship, the closest bond possible with your dragon, but they're still, it's a wild beast. You are riding a nuclear warhead, and, you know, Arrax pissed off Vhagar and Vhagar retaliated, you know, and I feel like that, you know, maybe some of that's just animal instinct. I think maybe a large part of it is animal instinct, but it also was nice that it kind of, you know, we heard, you hear any dragon rider commanding their dragon in High Valyrian, which we've seen all throughout the season as, you know, something that they have to learn. But Dany in Game of Thrones, she hatched the dragons effortlessly, seemingly bonded with them effortlessly. You know, it was just seeing this aspect of it where you learn like, oh no, they actually have to like work pretty hard. Like there's trainings that you have to do with the dragon keepers and you have to learn the language and everything else. And sometimes that's, and all of that is still not going to matter because it's a fucking dragon. I mean, I feel like that's, you know, it's kind of a simple explanation for it, to be honest.
How many thousands of lives could Viserys have saved if he just sat Aemon down after he claimed Vhagar and gone, all right, son, there comes a time in every man's life when he rides his first dragon and you need to talk about protection because there may be a time when you're chasing your nephew and something. And
Viserys didn't have any other kids other than Rhaenyra.
Oh, that's true. What am I saying?
Zing, Vanessa. It's the where babies come from talk, except repurposed for Targaryen. So yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I liked it. I thought it worked. That's just, you know, and I think that, you know, and we were kind of talking about this a little bit before with the dagger and with, you know, Team Black or Rhaenyra, the show trying to give them like more purpose so that you do pick them as a side over the greens or whatever. Like, I think the show has done a really good job overall of, if not making the greens more like sympathetic necessarily as a whole,
Allison, I think that mostly,
thank you. That's what I was gonna say. They've made
and Helena, but she already was, yeah.
Our sweet baby. Allison is the face of the greens, and this has really humanized her and made her, I think, crucially more understandable of a character. You can see why her kids are fuck ups and why she justifies doing things the way that she does, because like you can see they've shown us that very painful personal life that she's led, like her private life, and how it's made her who she is. So I think it's all of that is to say that I think it makes the greens versus blacks still feel very even, air quotes, even considering what happened with Aemond and Luke, and that this is going to be the spark that ignites the powder keg. Like I said, I don't have complaints about it. I think it worked really well. But
I agree. Just one quick thing. I'm biased, I know, but I would still not call them even just because of the sheer number of a-holes on the green side compared to the number of a-holes on the black.
Well,
Damon, I think they could have. Yeah.
Damon is potentially a large enough a-hole that he kind of equals several smaller a-holes on Team Green.
Maybe. So, I don't know. Aemond does his more than his fair share of war crimes. So
yeah, he's getting there. He's catching up to his idol who he has a poster of on his bedroom wall. So sorry, Patrick, go ahead.
No problem. What was I going to say? I've been thinking about, you know, Rhaenyra and Allison's arcs and how, honestly, I think there were a lot of missed opportunities. I think, especially in the earlier episodes, things were introduced and then dropped, and actions that I thought were going to come back never had consequences. And I think there could have been a really solid way to characterize Team Green as being more sympathetic so that it is a little bit more of an even playing field morally between the blacks and the greens. And either these professional writers didn't think about these things that I thought about, you know, driving to work, or that was a decision that they made to give Rhaenyra more, well, not more redeemable qualities, but fewer irredeemable qualities to skew us in favor of Team Black. But I do sort of consider it a loss because I feel like, especially in the way that Rhaenyra treats Alicent and Kristen early, when Millie Millie Alcock is playing her. They had enough material to really give the Greens a decent reason to oppose and dislike Rhaenyra. And then they just kind of dropped it after the 10-year jump. I mean, specifically in the way that Rhaenyra, I feel like there's some stuff there. We saw her instructing the Bard, Sam the Bard, like he's a Spotify app. And she tells Daemon that what the small folk want is of no consequence. So we get these little things of like, okay, she's a princess who has grown up, if not expecting to rule one day, at least in extreme luxury. And while Alicent is not exactly like a pauper who like pulled herself up by her own bootstraps, she is of lower status than Rhaenyra, and Kristen is definitely of lower status. And I think that the opportunity was there to really have Rhaenyra kind of reject Kristen Cole for reasons that are less less sympathetic than the ones that we got, and have him really feel lesser than. And then, you know, 10 years later, he's still salty about it, which is stupid. But like, I feel like there was a position there to at least explore that angle, and they just absolutely dropped it. Anyways, that was just, it's been bugging me for weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of that, but I will also say that I don't feel like we've seen the Green side treat servants or, you know, common folk any better necessarily. So yeah, I mean, it's something they could have leaned into much harder and they didn't for whatever reason. And one more quick thing I'll say is I feel like with Rhaenyra, I think they're taking great care in not repeating some of the mistakes that they made with Daenerys, because that generated so much backlash after season 8. And I'm sure they went into this knowing that Rhaenyra would probably be a Daenerys-like figure that people would latch onto, and not that they're going to completely soften her, but to not like character assassinate her is something they're probably thinking about.
The fact that madness has not been mentioned once makes me cry with joy.
Thank
and
God.
Relief.
Yeah. It's funny. I had not like thought of that until you mentioned it just now. But looking back on it, yeah, it's not, there's no mention of Targaryen madness in a show about solely about Targaryens. And that is a good
thing. It's a blessing from the Seven.
That is a very good thing. All right. Well, are there any other like really spectacular scenes we want to touch on about the finale?
I just wanted to mention, we don't have to get too deep into them, but I just wanted to say I really loved the coronation scene for Rhaenyra. Like, it's so somber and it's so sad, but then you have this, you know, wonderful moment where Eric with an E, right?
I think so. Yeah, crown,
brings her father's crown. And I think we touched on this in a different, or like maybe it was last week's podcast episode, but I love it that it's her father's crown and it's also Jaehaerys's crown, so the conciliator's crown. So, you know, show like a symbol that, you know, she is her father's chosen heir, and also that her plan, at least initially, is to unite the realm and be that conciliator. And that's what her goal is. That's not what's going to happen necessarily, but that's where she's wanting to go as a leader. And I love that. And then the fact that we see Daemon crown her just like he did with his brother, just, oh, all the feels.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful scene. And it is in, you know, really stark contrast to Aegon's coronation of the Dragon Pit, where it's like basically everything is being done by force. And he's wearing the Conqueror's crown, you know, not just because it's his namesake, but because, you know, I think the Greens' approach is completely different, where it's like they do kind of see it as, you know, a conquest. That's what the feel of the coronation has, because like they're kind of forcing the small folk in. Nobody really knows what's going on, and they just come in and say, "Hey, this is what's happening. Aegon is king." Da da da. And then again, by contrast, you have Rhaenyra, who is like offered the crown in a humble way by, you know, just a knight of the Kingsguard. And everybody there at Rhaenyra's coronation, small though it is, everyone that's there really is there out of love or respect for her, because it's, you know, taking place at it takes place at a delicate time, because that happens right after she burns the baby's body on the funeral pyre, right? Yeah,
it's a cremation turned coronation,
right?
It's like crimination.
Coronation.
Sorry, terrible. Yeah. And then the only other scene I just wanted to like really quickly mention, just because it was probably my favorite, is when they're treating with Otto on the bridge. I mean, and mostly because Damon's lovely quips about his tent of a king and setting his withered talk to himself. And then Rhaenyra just tossing the hand of the kingpin, which is fantastic. Yeah.
She just marches over and she's just like, no. You did not earn this, and just like, yeah, I thought it was great. I love that scene too. I'll touch on this when we talk about the season one overall, but Dragonstone continues to be my favorite setting of the series, just because of the visually, and that scene on the bridge, you know, evoking the one from an earlier episode where it was Damon and Otto again in confrontation. But yeah, no, it was fantastic, and just visually set against the backdrop of Dragonstone. Again, chef's kiss. So there is so much more we could probably talk about with this episode, but there are always conversations to be had, and we are going to wrap it up here. That has been our discussion of the finale of House of the Dragon. Thanks everybody for joining us once again, and we will see you all next time.